From the land of Grand Teton University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the 11th day of January, 2022. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson. He's at L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana. Don Day will help us close out the half hour together by checking in on the weather forecast. And along the way, we'll take a peek into the renewable diesel fuel market in North Dakota with Frayne Olson from North Dakota State University Extension, and discuss what's been happening in the agricultural energies with Stephen Platt of Archer Financial Services, all on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Medium. Find us online at WILLAG.org.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
March corn today at 6:01, settled a penny and a quarter higher. The May contract up 1 1/4 at 6:02 1/2, and December futures at $5.57 1/2 a bushel, a half cent higher. The March soybeans up a penny and 3/4 at $13.86 1/2, and November at $13 even, down a half cent. Bean meal 3.20 lower at $413.10 a ton, and the bean oil at $58.87 up 84 cents. Wheat futures soft red at 7.70 1/4, 8 1/4 higher, and the hard red at 7.91 3/4, up 13.5 cents. Live cattle futures in Chicago finished 62.5 cents higher. Well, John Hester is in for Wayne Nelson this afternoon. Thanks, John, for taking the time with us today. I appreciate that.
Oh, you're welcome.
Yeah. So tell me a little bit about this trade in Chicago, because while it's settled pretty near unchanged, it looks like there was some variability, especially in the soybeans, through the overnight and day trade.
Yeah, I think it's a two-edged sword again. It's what the traders are trying to believe or want to believe. They lowered the Brazilian soy yield and the Argentina soybean yield about 2.5 million metric tons each. They lowered the corn about 1 million metric. And then the weather forecast, it's supposed to be dry the rest of this week. They're talking plenty of rain. So I don't think the traders know what to believe.
Tomorrow, the United States Department of Agriculture will release its view of not only the South American crops, but the final crop production reports for the year. And it'll have the grain stocks numbers as well. What are the expectations?
Well, I think that U.S. is going to lower the South American crop some, but not as much as South America's lowered it. I think U.S. is going to be a couple million lower, and both corn and beans, and they think the world stocks might stay about the same overall and maybe go up just a little bit in corn and beans. So I look for tomorrow to be a wild day.
It usually is in January. These reports, more than any other report during the year, with the exception of maybe, the August crop production report, can really swing things. Oh, and I suppose the acreage numbers at the end in March as well. But this particular report can swing things pretty quickly, and it also sets the tone much of the time for the first quarter of the year. Do farmers just set themselves aside and wait it out at this point now?
You know, I think they probably do. That, you know, they kind of got accustomed to higher prices 3 or 4 months ago, and they all think that the high prices are coming back, which they may. But, you know, a lot of them avoided selling at the end of the year for tax reasons. And, you know, they wait. They think, well, after the first year, the markets will go up and we'll sell. But, you know, that probably only works about 50% of the time. So,
and oftentimes it only works if you manage to make the sale before the USDA reports, I think.
Right. But we have had some sales, though. Mexico bought 100 million metric tons of corn today, and South Korea is tendering for about 130 million metric tons of corn. So, you know, the export sales aren't great, but they're still selling a little along.
Locally, what's the cash basis like, especially going into maybe Linden and some other places that are end users?
I'd say corn in Linden fluctuates between 10 and 20 over, and beans are about 5 to 10 over right now into Lafayette.
You know, so basis remains really, really strong. I don't suspect that even if tomorrow were to change things very much, that basis would break then.
I doubt it, because especially for the corn in Linden, you know, they got Valero that makes the alcohol, and, you know, they're going to pay the basis whatever it is, so, and they want to keep them full, so they keep the basis good.
They need to continue to blend that in order to get ethanol into the pumps. Anything else before I let you go for the day?
No, I see. Crude oil was up pretty good, and I think that's probably on inflationary fears. And gasoline was down 6-7 cents, and heating oil was down. So that's good for us, the consumer. But, you know, I think the next big thing on the horizon is the report tomorrow and what this inflation is going to do down the road. So
we'll have you keep an eye on it for us. Thank you so much, and thanks for filling in today.
All right, no problem. I enjoyed it. Have a good one.
You too, John. That's John Hester. He is with L&M Commodities. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Frayne Olson from North Dakota State University Extension, an agricultural economist based there in Fargo, is joining us now to talk about the marketplace. Hi, Frayne. Thanks for being with us today.
Oh, always a pleasure. I enjoy visiting.
I'd like to talk with you a little bit about the soybean market in the western part of the primary growing regions of the United States, there in the Dakotas, parts of Minnesota. As it relates to soybean, of course, those have been being exported to China out the West Coast. However, there is a new poll from California for renewable diesel, and I'm wondering what that means in North Dakota.
Yeah, okay, so first a little bit of background to provide some context to make this, hopefully this will make some sense. So recently, as everybody kind of has probably heard now, California has these new carbon laws that they're trying to do a cap and trade process. Okay, and with that, that has really stimulated a lot of discussion and interest in alternative fuels. How can we try and use the existing fuel system we have, the infrastructure we have for liquid fuels, and how do we try and meet these new carbon standards with what we have? Well, one of the developments now, because of that change in primarily in policy in California now, the incentives have shifted, and there's a lot more growing interest in actually manufacturing diesel fuel from lipids, from a vegetable oil or a fat. Now, the first plant that did that was actually down in Louisiana, taking some of the livestock grease that was from a processing plant, converting it into renewable diesel. So the difference between biodiesel and renewable diesel: biodiesel, you're taking soybean oil or a vegetable oil, it's been highly refined, you're blending it with diesel fuel just like you would similar to ethanol. We've had that around for quite a while. What's different here is you're literally taking a lipid or a fat like a soybean oil or an animal fat, and you're actually cracking it, you're running it through an oil refinery, and you're making diesel fuel. So the chemical that comes out the back end is chemically identical and meets the diesel fuel standard. So essentially, instead of taking crude oil and making diesel fuel, you're now taking a vegetable oil and making diesel fuel. And the carbon footprint for a renewable feedstock is very, very different. Well, there's a plant in western North Dakota that was originally designed and put up a few years ago for refining the Bakken crude oil into diesel fuel that was recently sold to Marathon Oil. And they're now taking soybean oil from this region and making renewable diesel. That renewable diesel then is being shipped into California and to meet that their carbon requirements. So the technology has been here for a while. We just haven't had the economic incentive to do it. And so this is really, if you look at what's happening with the soybean oil market, the futures market, and kind of the crush margins that have now appeared in the last 6 to 8 months, the main driving force, not the only driving force, but one of the main driving forces has been this introduction and excitement about the movement into a renewable diesel fuel.
But one plant doesn't do all that much, and I think it's a fairly small plant as well.
So the I don't know the size of the plant down in Louisiana that's been operating for a while, but I do know the plant out in western North Dakota is about 185 million gallons, which, you know, in the scale of oil refining, that's really, really tiny. And that was one of the reasons that, you know, the original idea or venture failed. And one of the reasons, again, that now Marathon, who is based in California and recognizing the changes and the trends in California, picked that up and said, okay, let's try and experiment and see if we can make this work. So one more thing, just some, and the back of the envelope statistics that I've done, just to give a relative size. And I had to make a few assumptions along the way here, obviously, but if we were to take all of the soybean oil that the current USDA WASDE is forecasting, the one that we saw in December, if you were to take all of those gallons of oil, refine them, and convert them into renewable diesel. Now, it's impossible in today's environment, but theoretically, if you could do that, that would be just about enough renewable diesel to supply the road diesel needs in California. That's road diesel only. It doesn't include construction or agricultural or all the other uses for diesel, just trucks driving up and down the roads in California. So the demand base, you know, if this were to take off, and I'm not saying it is, there's a lot of interest in it, and there's going to be a lot of money that's now going to be spent to move in this direction. But this potentially has the ability to shift a lot of not only acres, but also the interest in oil seeds, and soybean being the biggest one in the U.S., but not the only source of vegetable oil. This really has some potential to be able to change the landscape. And there's a lot of people very excited about this, but it's going to take tremendous investment. We're going to have to put up more refining capacity. We're going to have to put up some more crushing capacity. The question is, how quickly will this come?
That's Frain Olson. He's an agricultural economist at NDSU, North Dakota State University Extension in Fargo. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media. Find us online at willag.org, willag.org. Don't forget, tomorrow morning at 11 a.m., we'll post as many of the numbers from the United States Department of Agriculture as quickly as we can after they're released. You can see them at willag.org or check my Twitter feed at Commodity Week. Let's check the agricultural energies now with Stephen Platt. He's at Archer Financial Services. Thank you, Stephen, for being with us. I'm wondering on the world stage whether the unrest in Kazakhstan has created any issues within the energy sector.
It certainly provided some basis for uncertainty with respect to Kazakhstan, which is a rather sizable oil producer, producing about 1.6 million barrels per day. There was one of their oil fields which was affected by protests, and that did shut down shipments from that area, which accounted for about 600,000. But this goes into the variety of problems we've seen with the production side, not only due to possible political unrest in that area, uncertainty with respect to Ukraine and Russian politics. They've moved troops into Kazakhstan, in fact. All those factors have created questions with respect to production, which had already happened, as we've talked about, in terms of OPEC not being able to really produce at their targeted ranges, despite them having steady increases.
So what do you see for the future of gasoline prices in the United States, RBOB, I suppose, and crude oil as it relates to ethanol and its usage in terms of number of miles driven, COVID-related, potentially the issues that we talked about already with both OPEC and then the supply side from the Eastern Bloc countries?
Well, the market today is moving up to levels we had not seen since October. It's actually now above those levels that we saw prior to the Omicron variant hitting globally. I think there is certainly challenges, which we've seen in terms of the DOE numbers with gasoline stocks building sharply. But on the other hand, crude stocks continue to drop, which is somewhat surprising due to refineries pretty much moving at as high at levels as they can sustain. That gasoline disappearance levels need to be watched. We do have the DOE number coming in tomorrow, which is expected to show a pretty sizable build in gasoline. But the market's been focused on the crude inventory levels. And as we talked about, with the price of nat gas high in terms of Europe, the substitution of petroleum derivatives is underpinning, I think, the demand side of the equation, which is tight and likely to continue to be because of OPEC supply constraints and also the fact that we are looking at an economy that looks like it will start to roll again pretty quickly once this Omicron variant starts to recede.
So does that mean the producers, farmers, other end users might need to look at booking diesel fuel needs at this point, despite the high prices?
I hope they use the brake. At this point, I'm a little bit hesitant to say that you want to book it in now. You do want to use brakes in this market. And we're at a range that is now overextended in my book. I wouldn't be surprised if some of the negotiations with Russia progress. We still have Iran as a wild card, along with even reserve releases. As the U.S. Starts to look at these high gasoline prices and see them as an inflationary force in terms of the U.S. economy. They had made efforts before when we were up at these levels, and they probably will make a more concerted effort at releasing reserves on those types of breaks. It may well be a point to look to secure supplies. But at this juncture, OPEC is going to be the calling in the shots, and the prospect that they could expand their production in the Mideast could lead to some pullbacks in this market. And if the demand side is a little bit softer than what they're looking for during the summer, that could also shade things to the downside as well.
Hey, thank you. I appreciate it.
My pleasure.
Stephen Platt is with Archer Financial Services. Joined us on this Tuesday afternoon. Speaking of that, it's time to check the weather forecast with Don Day. He's at Day Weather. Hey, Don, thanks so much for being with us. I just took a look, and you are nearly 20 degrees warmer than I am here, and you're in Cheyenne, Wyoming.
One thing you do notice about weather patterns across the United States is a lot of times when it warms up in the Rockies and the Western High Plains and along the West Coast, that means a high-pressure system is building out west, and the jet stream then takes a dip right into the heart of the United States, and that's what leads to that colder weather in the Midwest. So while the West has been cold around Christmas through the New Year's, now that cold is moving into other parts of the United States. And there's, you know, more winter weather to come, Todd, as we get at the end of this week and into the weekend. Folks out in the northern and northwestern Corn Belt, from Iowa to Missouri, eastern Nebraska, the Dakotas, parts of Minnesota, they're going to see a pretty good little snow event come on in.
How big?
Well, there's going to be some areas, especially in central and western Iowa, southwest areas of Minnesota, back into places like Lincoln and Omaha, to where I would not be surprised at all if there's some areas that get 6 to 10 inches of snow.
Then turn your attention back a little further to the west. I'd like to talk about some of the wheat growing regions, hard red winter wheat in particular, Kansas, Oklahoma, parts of Texas. It looks like that the warm weather they're having now might be followed up by some cold weather. Of course, it's been dry, and there's really not any snow cover either.
Yeah, there was a little bit of snowfall in some of those areas, very little, but some, between Christmas and New Year's, and along with some colder temperature readings. But before that happened, there's been very little precipitation, warmer than average temperatures, and they are going to go through a little bit of a warm-up right now. Unfortunately, the pattern that we're in, and this is typical in La Nina, the down-sloping winds off the Rockies keep those winter wheat areas in a very dry pattern, and likely will for another 7 to 10 days. And you brought up the fact that there could be some colder weather coming, and we certainly see that in about a week to 10 days into those western high plains winter wheat areas. So there is some risk of little or no snow cover with some cold temperatures coming later on. There really has not been any good news for that wheat area with precipitation and temperatures, although I don't think it's going to be warm enough for long enough to bring things out of dormancy.
Do the dry conditions now concern you for any parts of the United States as we go further into the calendar year for spring or even summer? And I know those are both a long way out.
Well, that's a great question. You know, the La Nina has been very robust. It's intensified a bit during the month of December. It's probably reaching its peak, but like when you fill your bathtub full of water, it takes a while for that temperature to change. And so it is not going to be until probably late spring and early summer before we see we can put La Nina to bed. So I am concerned, especially the southern plains, and that would include Kansas, Oklahoma, Texas, eastern Colorado. Those areas, I think, are the last to see the impacts of La Nina. Some areas to the west and north will see some improvements, but I do think it's a concern into the part of the spring where that precipitation is so critical. But ultimately, long term, La Nina is going to fade and go away by this summer. It's how long is it going to hang on here through the winter? Right now, it's very robust.
Hey, thank you. I appreciate it, Don.
Thank you.
Don Day is with Day Weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming. Joined us here on the Closing Market Report for this Tuesday afternoon. It comes to you from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world.